Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up? Welcome in. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com, also on Instagram, IGJ Hood, as we broadcast live from our first Midwest Bank Studios.
Yeah.
Money on my mind. Money on my mind.
Yeah.
Money on my mind. Money on my mind.
Yeah.
Money on my mind. Money on my mind.
That's
money,
right.
Money on my mind.
We will hear from Kendall Gill. Kendall Gill, who covers the Bulls for NBC Sports Chicago. We'll hear from him coming up in about 7 minutes right here on ESPN 1000. The ESPN, we talk NFL, we'll talk NBA playoffs as well as the Chicago Bulls with him in a matter of moments. If you're just joining us, we talked about the Chicago Bears. That's where I want to get to, the Bears and their schedule here. It's a great breakdown for the 2019 season. The number of games the Bears will play on Thursdays this season will be three, the most in franchise history. The Bears are going to be on primetime television a lot for the nation to see. They'll host the Packers on September 5th and the Cowboys on December 5th in primetime contests at Soldier Field and visit the Lions on November 28th on Thanksgiving Day. The number of Bears home games scheduled to kick off on Sundays at noon this season against the Chargers on October 27th, the Lions on November 10th, and the Giants on November 24th, that's three. Three other home contests will begin at 7:20 against the Packers. That's the opener on September 5th. They'll take on the Cowboys on December 5th and the Chiefs on December 22nd. The number of consecutive wins by the Bears against NFC West opponents is four. They swept the division last season, beating the Seahawks, the Rams, and the Cardinals, and the 49ers. The Bears' only game against the NFC West opponent this season will be November 17th, Sunday Night Football against the Rams. in Los Angeles. Number of games the Bears will play this season against the 2018 playoff teams will be six. They'll face three on consecutive Sundays immediately after their bye week in the Saints October 20th, Chargers on October 27th, the Eagles on November 3rd. The others are versus the Rams on November 17th and the Cowboys on December 5th and the Chiefs on December 22nd. So the Bears in prime time a lot. It is an interesting schedule. I mentioned that with the pen, I wrote down 10-6. Of course, I'm going to change that or maybe not by the time we get to Bourbonnais. But it's a very interesting schedule for the Bears. So again, some great opinions from Jeff Dickerson in our last hour. We'll also kind of delve more into the Bears as we move forward here in this particular program here on ESPN 1000. Before we hear from Kendall Gill, as I put the Bears stuff over here, set this here. We have so much NFL schedule stuff. So I'm going to set this to my left and then look into my immediate right. And I have here a column written by Shannon Ryan from the Tribune. Loyola lucked out in keeping Porter Moser. And it says, dash, for now. Mid-major coaches aren't supposed to stick around. When a high-major program comes calling, especially when they open their purse strings, a coach is supposed to jump at the opportunity. Loyola coach Porter Moser opted against this supposed common knowledge, turning down an 8-year deal worth $17 million to $18 million from St. John's. Let us hear now from Porter Moser, who was on earlier with Waddle and Sylvie, talking about a number of things. Moser talks about how close he was to leaving Loyola as the men's head coach.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be transparent as hell. I mean, we start talking about the zeros.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard. I mean, it's you know, that level, that next jump up financially is a big thing. So anytime you're ambitious and you want opportunities, you look at a multi-bid league, and you're talking about that. So yeah, it was something there where I had to really look at it, and then I just, you know, at the end, my heart was here. But I tell you one thing, guys, that I want to be a sounding board for this for the whole country, and I hope we continue to grow Loyola to a point where we can be something special every year. But I don't like the trend, and that's what making mid-major coaches look at that level, because what's happening with all these bids going to the Power Five, the Power Five are going to 20-game schedules. Everything is gearing towards the NCAA tournament with automatic bids and then the at-large bids to go to those. So what I don't want to happen, because I think it's bad for student-athletes, bad for programs, is that the body of work during a season doesn't mean anything. I don't want that to end, because like this year, we had so much pressure on us and people chasing us, and we lost three guys from last year. Lucas Williamson missed 19 games, and we still won the league. And in the tournament, we lost to Bradley by two. It happens, and then people are like putting their arm around me going, sorry, coach, for the bad year. I'm like, that's what you don't want. You don't want teams to have a body of work not mean anything where the only thing that matters is 3 days in March.
So how much were players in the program part of the decision?
That's why I was miserable. I was gut-wrenched during this last 72 hours because Sunday morning, this had a huge play. I even told the people at St. John's that Sunday morning, we had two players on their official visits, the ones we signed today, Keith Clemens and Jalen Pickens. They were at breakfast. So I had one family in on Sunday morning. We were having breakfast, and I was doing my closing deal, and they committed right there on the spot. The mom's hugging each other. Everyone in the restaurant is looking at us. She's hugging, crying, and it was awesome. Then they leave, and then we brought the next family in. That was the closing of their official visit before they headed out. And then they did the same thing. They both committed Sunday morning, and then all of a sudden this whole St. John's thing's rolled, and all of a sudden I'm going, holy cow. I don't know how people do it. I just sat there and looked at them, told them, we just saw this. So it had huge. And you know what? It was a great teaching moment with my kids. Talking to my kids about them, it was just Sunday. I mean, they were calling other schools to cancel their official visits. I mean, how do you? That's hard to do. That's hard to do. And I just felt that I can't do it. I couldn't do it. It was definitely a factor with it. And I thought the other cool teaching point was, obviously, money's involved, with different things. But it was a great teaching moment to talk to my kids about, is that you can be rich in other ways besides money. And I'm rich because I live in a city I love. I'm rich because I work with people I love. I'm rich because I we're building. We're building something. I have a purpose here at Loyola.
Thoughts there from Porter Moser as you're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Porter Moser did not take the St. John's job because St. John's is a dumpster fire. That's why. St. John's probably needs to overpay $4 to $5 million after talking to a few people this afternoon about the St. John's job and what has been going on since Norm Roberts had the job. I'll start there from 04-05, the old Illinois assistant. Steve Lavin had that job. Chris Mullen quit his own alma mater because St. John's is a mess internally. I love the shiny narrative on Coach Moser that, he stayed because he was loyal to the program. He wanted to stay in Loyola. Rogers Park. He wanted to stay with Loyola. Can I tell you something? The reason why Porter Moser is still with Loyola is because St. John's is not a premier job anymore. Lou Carnesecca in his old sweater is not roaming the sidelines. And so if it was another job that paid a little bit more money that he could be able to take his hammer and nails with and try to build that program, Porter would be gone. And the narrative of, he's so loyal, not loyalty. It's about dollar signs. Also, there are reports that, just looking at my phone, there are reports that I don't think that Porter liked the idea that he's a second or third choice for the St. John's job. He wasn't the first choice. He just came in an interview like everybody else. So the idea of the shiny columns and the narrative of, he stayed because he's from Chicago. That's not the reason why that Porter's here. Porter's here because, yes, he wants to build this program to be a winner like he did a couple of years ago getting to the Final Four. But I think that, like any mid-major coach, you're tired of being in one-bid leagues. That's why coaches leave. They start at a certain level. They get into one-bid league. They may get themselves in their conference tournament, get into the NCAA tournament. But at some point, they springboard themselves out of that situation because they get tired of battling with these other teams, thinking that I'm as good as the top team, but yet we're a one-bid league. I can't get there. I'm going to leave. Something also underreported from, again, around the Final Four is that this is not the only job that Porter was interested in. Porter was interested in the UNLV job. Obviously didn't take it, but the idea that Porter stayed because it's Chicago, it's Loyola. Everybody was a Loyola fan for like 4 weeks, okay? I can't get five phone calls on Loyola basketball in April because I know that I'm not talking to a vast college basketball audience. I know I'm not doing this show in Durham. I'm not doing this show, you know, in Texas or in so anywhere in the Triangle, whether it's Duke fans, North Carolina fans. So if Porter wants to leave, Porter will leave at some point. There's no doubt. But I don't want it to be this, well, he left and he wasn't loyal. It's not about loyalty. It's about how he could be paid. And if he finds a new challenge, he's going to take that challenge. But being in this one-bid league in the Valley could be frustrating. He was as good as Bradley. That program was as good as Bradley, and they fell short, just barely. At some point, just like so many others, they will leave a program to go someplace in a bigger conference with more money, with more prestige, and more eyeballs on it. Simple as that. So I love reading these columns and seeing these tweets from his former and current players. Yes. Porter stayed because he's loyal to the program. No, Porter was loyal to his family and the almighty dollar because that's what makes it goes around. He needs to be appreciated. He's still underpaid at Loyola. you got a program in the Final Four that didn't even have a radio broadcast. Okay, I mean, and you have to find them on the sub channel on NBC Sports Chicago. That program deserves better than that from a television standpoint. And they need a radio team. They don't even have that. So he needs that. So the program deserves Porter because Porter is going to work hard. I will give him credit as we get ready to talk to Kendall Gill. I'll give him credit. Kendall Gill, we'll talk to him in just a moment. Porter Moser is someone that was knocking on dorms at Loyola. It's like, hey, man, you need to come to our games. We're building something. Knocking on doors, trying to get people to come. And he built that grassroots effort, great program that he's been able to build because of him and his staff. And so now it's a must-see every year for them. So he's still underpaid. He'll get his money. It more likely won't be from Loyola, but it'll be from a bigger program that has multiple automatic bids or multiple bids to get into the NCAA tournament. And you got to try at some point. And Porter will. It's not about loyalty. It's about appreciation. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We turn now to a man who covers the Chicago Bulls in the NBA for NBC Sports Chicago. It is Kendall Gill. As we talk to him now on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Kendall, as always, I appreciate your time. So let me ask you this. So this time next year, the Bulls will be in the playoffs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, I think next year at this time, you will see the Bulls in the playoffs. You know, I thought that you would see them in the playoffs actually this year, but when they got devastated with those four early injuries and then the coaching change, it's just hard to rebound from that. But what they have done, and you know, I know Gar and Pax get a lot of flack around the city, but, you know, you got to give them credit for putting together a team that's built for the future. You know, you got the youngest team in the NBA. Four-year positions are solidified. Zach LaVine at the two guard, Larry Markkanen at the power forward, Wendell Carter Jr. at the center position, and Otto Porter at the small forward position. If you can keep those guys together for a number of years, you're going to see that core play big dividends in the future. Now, the question mark is the point guard position, which is what I think that the Bulls, should they get the number two pick in the draft, should draft Ja Morant, because, you know, I think that the point guard position, Chris Dunn, we've seen him for a couple years now, and I just don't think at this point that Chris, you can solidify him as a bona fide starter for this team the next 4 or 5 years. I think that you have to go out and make that position better. If you cannot get Ja Morant, you got to get the next best point guard in the draft. And also, I believe, and you know this, Jay, that I've been saying this for a long time, I believe the Bulls should go out and try to re-sign Derrick Rose. He's coming off of a great year, averaging 26, 27 minutes a game, but averaging almost 18, 19 points a game. And, you know, I think that he would make this team a whole lot better. He's not trying to be the MVP anymore. He's cool with coming off of the bench and providing scoring off of the bench. And also he's going to provide that veteran leadership as well. You know, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins said that had it not been for Derrick Rose's leadership in the locker room, they would have never made it to the Jimmy Butler debacle. That's why you have to, and that's exactly what this team needs. This is a young team that needs veteran leadership from a guy that can still really play. He's still at an elite level. You saw Zach LaVine before in his exit interview say that, yeah, Derrick Rose is still elite. And all of the players know this. Now, hopefully, the Chicago Bulls will really seriously entertain the thought of bringing him back.
Kendall Gill from NBC Sports Chicago with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I don't know what the Bulls are if they're injured. That's the whole thing.
Right.
Like, we could talk about the core, and I would agree with you on paper, especially with a veteran like Otto Porter on the team. That's the one thing that cannot be denied, that on the floor, it's a core that could have been as good as what Detroit is doing right now as they work their way up. But when you're always hurt, it's not just injuries. As you well know, playing the league for so long, there's always going to be injuries and pain. But when you have an abundance of injuries, when you're missing multiple games and seeing, you know, more and more of the players not being able to be available, then I don't know what you have. I know what it is on paper, Kendall, but it's hard for me to tell you for sure what the Bulls are unless I see them in the core play together for a lot of games.
Absolutely, and we haven't seen that as of yet, you know, and I think that the Bulls just had buzzard luck this season, you know. Who thought Wendell Carter would break his thumb? Who thought Denzel Valentine would have to have reconstructive ankle surgery? Who thought that Larry Markkanen would get hurt the second day of training camp with his elbow? Who thought that Bobby Portis would be out? You know, none of us saw that coming, and you're absolutely right. When you have a bunch of injuries to your key players, then it's going to affect what's going to happen. But I can tell you this, though, Jay Hood. If these guys can stay healthy, they're going to win some basketball games, and they'll be in the playoffs next year. You know, everybody saw what the Sacramento Kings did, almost making the playoffs this year, making that big jump. I think that the Bulls, at this point, if you look at them at every position, are more talented than the Sacramento Kings. I think that they're more talented than the Detroit Pistons, who eked into the playoffs. You know, I think that they're more talented than the Orlando Magic, who got into the playoffs. The only thing is they just weren't all together. Now, what we have to do, we have to be lucky next year, keep everybody healthy. And if we keep everybody healthy, man, I'm going on record as saying this. Bulls could get anywhere from 6th to 5th position in the playoffs.
We will see. Again,
yes.
We'll see.
Absolutely.
And I think that I can see the personnel being that high, but until I see them on the floor and be able to work as a cohesive unit, I have no idea.
You're absolutely right?
That's only fair. absolutely. So, Kendall, tell me this. Who do you think is the best coach for LeBron James and now in the twilight of his career? Because the Lakers, of course, boy, I tell you what, you can say whatever you want to say about the Bulls, but the Lakers and the Knicks had some really sketchy teams from a front office standpoint.
Yeah.
So now what do the Lakers do as far as a head coach? What's best for LeBron right now?
I really like Monty Williams, who mm-hmm. is the associate, I believe, head coach at or assistant coach at the Philadelphia 76ers right now. Because Monty, one, brings – you got to respect him. He knows the game. He's been successful as a head coach. I believe that he has the heart to tell LeBron, no, we want to run it. We have to run it this way. I don't believe you can go hire a guy that's going to do whatever LeBron says. You know, you got to hire a guy that is going to try and implement his system that LeBron has to adapt to. You know, and I think that Monty Williams is the guy for that job.
Well, the thing is that with LeBron, you're just trying to figure out, Kendall, you know, how do you get the best out of LeBron, because he does want to be coached, but there is always this air of just this passive aggressiveness and putting Maya Angelou quotes on Instagram, this nonsense. Just like, man, it's just basketball, man. You just got to play and lead a bunch of young guys in this Lakers roster.
You absolutely do. But also, too, I believe that the Lakers will eventually end up with Anthony Davis. That's where he wants to go. I believe with Anthony Davis, then, you know, you add up players around him and LeBron, and you're right back in the playoff picture. You know, I don't think the Lakers situation is totally broken. They just need to tweak a couple of things. You know, yes, they messed up by messing up the trade with Anthony Davis. And I don't think that they messed it up. I think they actually, the New Orleans Pelicans just probably didn't want to trade Anthony Davis there out of spite. But that being said, it still happened. Those players, those young players, feel like LeBron doesn't think that they're good enough. And that is a carryover. That is going to be a carryover if they have to play with LeBron next year. You know, and honestly, if LeBron hadn't sat out 19 games this year, been out with that injury to his groin, they would have made the playoffs. You know, so that's why I say the situation isn't as bad as it seems. You know, all they have to do is put a couple of things in, get a couple of free agents, particularly Anthony Davis, hire Monty Williams if I'm the GM, and, you know, I think that they're right back as the Los Angeles Lakers that we all know.
You can catch Kendall Gill with Tilo Lopez for the ParlayShow.com against ParlayShow.com. A lot of mixed martial arts and a lot of combat sports conversation there. ParlayShow.com is where you can catch Kendall and Tilo as we talks to me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So no Boogie Cousins now for the Golden State Warriors. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the end of their championship run, but it is just apropos for DeMarcus Cousins in this spot, Kendall, an opportunity to get himself a ring, and it still very well could happen, but it would have been nice to see if he could have been part of that. But the injury to the big man now is going to be too much for him to continue on the playoffs.
Yeah, it would have been nice for him to go to play for Golden State, go get a championship, then go elsewhere, because, of course, Golden State doesn't have the money that he'll be looking for next year to re-sign him. But that being said, he's still going to get a ring because they're still going to win, I believe. You know, they really didn't need DeMarcus Cousins. They didn't really need Kevin Durant, actually, to win championship. Right. So, you know, actually what they did was they put two turbo boosters on a Ferrari that already had 485 horsepower. So, you know, and he'll still get a ring. Yes, he won't be able to participate in these playoffs, but he'll get the ring as a member of the team, and then he'll move along. I think that Golden State is just too strong, too powerful. Yeah, the Clippers came back from 30-point deficit the other night, but, you know, they're not going to catch lightning in a bottle twice, believe me. Golden State is going to come out. I believe they play tonight again and take care of business.
I need your help with Russell Westbrook. I need your keen NBA insight on Russell Westbrook. And okay, so on the surface, you and I both know that guy's walking into the Hall of Fame. He's Mr. Triple-Double. He has a lot of wins under his belt. He is a winner because he plays with a ruthless aggression. He wants to rip your face off to win. So I get that. But I just want to know from you, like, when you see Russell Westbrook, do you foresee an NBA championship in his career? Because I'm watching that game last night, and I see Portland with the 2-0 series. It didn't mean the series is over, but just the point is that Russell's playing so hard, 130 miles an hour. I'm wondering, in his mind, does he feel like he has enough, or is he doing so much that is a detriment to the team?
He probably feels like he has enough with Paul George, Steven Adams, and those guys. But, you know, I don't know whether he'll win a championship. And here's the reason. Not because of his team and his talent. It's just he has major obstacles in his way. He has Golden State in his way. He has the Houston Rockets in his way. You know, and when you expend as much energy as he expends throughout the season, when it comes playoff time, I don't know whether he can go to another level. In order to win a championship, if you're Russell Westbrook, you have to ramp up your game and go to another level. Now, we already know how hard he plays. Can Russell Westbrook go to another level? I don't know. You know, and he has to be Superman now in order to get past those guys. That's why I don't think that he'll win an NBA championship.
I just look at it like this, Kendall. If you're averaging in your career 30% from three, as you well know, it's from long distance. It is a shooting league now from three, especially with someone with the ball in his hands so often. In the regular season, he shot 29% in his career, shooting 30%. And this is no shade on the 22 points a game, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. I know he's a great player. But I'm just thinking, like, if you don't have another gear in your game as far as getting better, getting over 35% from three for a guy that has the ball in his hands so much, then I don't know how this gets better. Because if he's not shooting the ball like everybody else shooting the ball, like Harden and some of these other prolific shooters, then I don't know how Oklahoma City gets better like that.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it either, unless they go out and get another dead-eye shooter that can knock it down from three relentlessly, you know, because then you can be able to cover up for Russell's weakness in that area. That's probably the only weakness he has is three-point arc. But, you know, if they can go out and get a guy, perhaps like a Joe Ingles or somebody that can knock down the three consistently along with Paul George, then, yeah, I can see they may have a chance. But not until they do that. You know, I think that, you know, Paul George, of course, can knock it down. Russell knocks it down every once in a while. But because of the way the league has gone, they need to strengthen their three-point shooting, and that's just something that they don't have right now.
How would he have played in your era? Because if you're not shooting the ball from three in your era, where you're getting to the basket, you're attacking the basket, high percentage shots, that dude would probably be amongst some of the best, right?
Yeah, I think he'd still be some amongst the best, you know, because, of course, you have hand-checking rules, and he probably wouldn't be able to get to the basket as easy, but I think that he would still be successful because of his sheer relentlessness, because he keeps coming, much like Allen Iverson used to do, continues to come. He's 6'4", 6'5", strong, and, you know, every once in a while he'll get together a three-point game where he knocks it down. So, I still think the same thing, that he would still be a Hall of Famer even if he played my era.
All right, lastly, what's your favorite series? What's the series you're looking at the most?
The series I'm looking at the most, if it should happen, is Milwaukee and Toronto. Mm-hmm. I really want to see how that plays out. I think that will be the Eastern Conference Finals. I want to see Giannis Antetokounmpo reach the NBA Finals, because I think really Milwaukee is the only team in the East that really has a chance to beat the Golden State Warriors, because, one, that they don't have anybody to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo. He can get to the rim anytime he wants to, and they've put all of those shooters around him. You look at Brogdon, you look at Nico Mirotic, you look at Brook Lopez, those guys that sit out on three-point line, they play a five-out offense, and they just wait for Giannis to penetrate, and if he gets stopped, he pitches the ball out, and they knock down a three-point shot, much like the Golden State Warriors do. However, Golden State, yeah, they're a great team, but they don't have a monster that can do what Giannis does.
All right, my friend, I'm glad you spent some time. Looking forward to the rest of these playoffs. It's been fun. I'm not getting any sleep, but I am watching a lot of playoff basketball, so I'm all good with that.
Hey, all right, good deal. Well, I'm going to go out to dinner, man. I have dinner for you, man, and I'll sleep for you tonight, too, because I'm not watching any games tonight.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right, this is Kendall Gill from NBC Sports Chicago. As we talk about the Bulls and the NBA, glad that you're with us on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Jonathan Hood.
So pay attention to my word, because it's the true fruit. Meditation is the mind that brings the youth. Yep. It's like a verse you could never read out of a book. Dropping the line in your mind like a fish hook.
On ESPN 1000.
You're listening to my mans and them, Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll talk about the NFC North and some Michigan football with Jim Brandstatter, the longtime voice of the Michigan Wolverines. We'll get his thoughts about what he sees for the upcoming football season, college and pro, at 9:15. Cubs win! Thank you, Len. The Cubs, they beat the Miami Marlins. And so we'll break that down a little bit later on in our broadcast here. Any problems you have with your offense, problems with your pitching, just play the Marlins. That'll take care of you. That'll get you right. That's your elixir right there. A little medicine, take on Miami, because they're awful. Glad that you're with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. That's no shot at the Cubs. You need to have, if you play Miami, if you have any problems, this can give you momentum. This gives you some energy. Like, hey, we're not hitting the ball well. Hey, we're not pitching well. But you know what? We're taking on a team we know we can beat on paper. The Cubs can beat 85% of the teams that they face. Just got to produce like that. And so that's, you play Miami, our team is going to lose 100 games. You get right. If you lost that series, that would be a major problem. So let me tell you about the Under the Hood podcast. My podcast, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Download it, subscribe, leave a 5-star and a review. You can find the Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood on Spotify, on SoundCloud. You can find it on Stitcher. You can find it on iTunes/Apple Music. Wherever you download your podcast, look for my podcast, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. It's not just shows that you might miss, right? There might be some shows. Hey, you know what? Weather's getting warm. You may not hear every hour. You may not hear every minute of the show. That's why we have Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Along with the show, we have some great conversations with guests that you may not have heard talk long form before. Chicago's own Cappy Pondexter was on the program. She recently, just like, 24 hours ago, retired from the WNBA. She's a WNBA champion. She's an Olympic gold medalist. It's funny, we just talked to her, two, 3 weeks ago, seemingly, and she announces her retirement. There was some foreshadowing in her conversation with me regarding whether or not that she was going to retire or not, and then growing in the WNBA. I talked to Skylar Diggins and Candace Parker about this, Cappy, on this program, about the WNBA and the improvements that have to happen for this league to grow. Skylar really dug in, and she talked about the obviously finances, and Cappy and Candace talked a lot about just more awareness and more promotion from the NBA for the WNBA. When you look at the WNBA, when you first got into it versus now, what changes did you see with the league? And is there still more that needs to happen for this league to continue to grow?
Oh, that's a great question. I respect Candace and Skylar a great deal. They know a lot about the business side of what we do, a great deal. We've been around for 23 years, and we know that we're a small business. And so we're trying to figure out any and every way we can possibly help this business propel forward. You know, we know we have our hands full, but I think Adam has been very transparent with us in terms of what needs to happen. You know, his daughter publicly came out and said she wants to play in the WNBA one day. So, you know, you have players like Kobe Bryant, whose daughter is so involved in women's basketball that she already knows what college she wants to go to and that she wants to play in the WNBA. So we just can't allow these young ladies' dreams to die. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. And we have to find ways to generate revenue for us. We have to find sponsorship dollars, and we have to put money into marketing to get the exposure. You know, there are a lot of factors that have to go into this right now. I think last year, we did the campaign Stand Up, which was dedicated to women empowerment who fought against the Trump administration. So it raised a lot of awareness. We went from 86,000 viewership per game to 116,000 views per game last year. Our marketing merchandise went up 50% in sales. So because of that that stand-up platform, whether, you know, we gained viewers from people who were against us or wasn't, you know, it still went up, and that's what has to happen. And so this year we kind of piggybacked off of the Marvel captain, and, you know, it's been pretty awesome. The draft is April 10th, and we're just looking forward to see what this draft class brings. You know, like when I first came into the league in 2006, my draft class had a lot of talk. You know, it was me and Simone Augustus as the number one pick. Who's going first? Who's going first? You know, we were both National Players of the Year. You know, I came out a year not in my class. So it was a big deal, you know. And I think even last year with Asia Wilson coming as the number one pick, you know, that momentum that she brought from college brought a lot of excitement to the league this year. So we just got to constantly, like, piggyback off the players that kind of bring the excitement and help generate dollars.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So it's about the players that's in the league right now in the WNBA, but also it's about the future. Who's going to be able to grow the league once you're retired, once Candace and Skylar and some of the other greats are retired from the league? Who's going to continue to kind of hold that torch and make the league grow? Because it is players, but also, and I agree with you and the others about this, it's on the NBA to be able to provide more marketing dollars and better viewership. Like, it's one thing to know that the game's on, but why is that game important? It's nothing happens without talent and TV and that kind of exposure. So those are, to me, those are the two things I look at to make this league grow even more so.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Adam Silver is a very strategic, smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's not going to let our league die. You know, I know as we're talking right now, he's probably trying to figure out a way to make it happen. I think this year is going to be very exciting. A lot of energy is surrounded with this year's season, and we're just going to figure it out. You know, our CBA is coming up very soon, and, you know, it's right now it's about the players standing together. It's about the leaders educating the younger players about the business aspect of what's getting ready to occur, and we just have to make sure that we're ready for this battle that comes with the CBA.
Cappy, being at the top of your craft as you are, could you tell me the process, what it was like for you to be part of a WNBA championship team? What's that like when you are able to get to the mountaintop?
It's a great feeling. You know, all your hard work that you put in from the moment that the team arrives together till the end. You know, it's just like it's a process. And getting through the process, you have to have patience. You have to have a lot of dedication. You have to be wise. You have to be just in a really good space mentally, you know, because we know that the game is it's a game of runs. You know, you're not going to have an inaugural perfect season all the time. That's a very rare case. But if you can control in those moments while you're preparing to win a championship to get as close as possible to that every single day, which is consistency, I think you have a really great chance to get over the mountaintop. It's not complicated. You know, I think we make it complicated. We put too much emphasis on it and we want it so bad that we might not end up getting it. But it's a very, very easy process. Me and Tarasi was able to do it for two wonderful seasons, and, you know, I would never change that, you know, and the whole process was just amazing, honestly.
Is there something that you haven't done in your career that you'd like to accomplish?
Oh, yeah. I'd like to win a third championship. You know, I love stacking my resume. I'm not going to shy away from that. I would love to have that quote-unquote happy ending to a successful career, you know, as a professional. If I can walk away with a third championship, I mean, that's heaven to me. That's like my life has been made. I can retire, go on the beach, put my feet up, and get ready and talk to my kids about all the wonderful things that I've done.
That's just a portion of the conversation I had with Cappy Pondexter. Again, it's part of the Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood podcast, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn app, iHeartRadio. Anywhere you download your podcast, you can find it Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Tales from the Hood is next.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Glad you're with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let me give you a little Tales from the Hood. From Grand Rapids, Michigan, man sues parents for getting rid of his vast porn collection. An Indiana man is suing his parents for getting rid of his vast pornography collection, which estimates $29,000. $29,000. Where's our guy for on Saturday mornings? Ah, that's a nice item. What's his name? Where's our guy? Tom Morgan. Thank you. The 40-year-old man last week filed a lawsuit in federal court in Michigan where he moved in with his parents in the 2016 following a divorce. He says that when he moved out 10 months later, they delivered his things to his new home in Muncie, Indiana, but that his 12 boxes of pornographic films and magazines were missing. His parents admit they dumped the porn, which includes titles such as Frisky Business and Big Bad Grannies. Ah! Big Bad Grannies. If you're into that kind of thing, yes. The man is seeking triple financial damages, $87,000. Man sues parents for getting rid of his porn.
It makes sense, right? Why they dumped it? Those titles? Come on, man. Come on.
If you're into Granny.
God almighty.
I did you a big favor for getting rid of all this stuff, the father said, but the son's like, nah. No, I need my granny porn. That's so disgusting. But so Indiana. We'll talk a little bit about just maligned the entire state. Now I'll never be able to get gas and cigarettes. Coming up, we'll get a chance to talk about the Bears' schedule. Oh, boy. The Bears are going to have a good season. I'll tell you why next.
You're listening to my mans and them.
Just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
What? J-Hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.